Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Germanicus. I am Gaius. We're on the Thames. It's turbulent. There's good fish. We're drinking wine. We don't work. It's Sunday. It's autumn. It's a little cool here in Roman Britain. We're surrounded by centurions and their families shopping late in the day. We're going to the theater later. And we look at the nightmare in Israel right now. Faced with gangsters, killers, whose crimes are evident to the world and repeatedly so. And what is to be done? The U.S. has sent two fleets, into the Eastern Mediterranean. Vladimir Putin mocked it as, what are they going to do, bomb Lebanon? That raises the question of a wider war. There was an emergency meeting in Cairo 24 hours ago called by President al-Sisi, bringing in Greece, France, Italy, Cyprus, in the Mediterranean basin. Several of those are EU NATO nations. Israel and the United States were not invited. And the topic was a wider war, something that could go wrong for all of them. Chiefly, al-Sisi is worried about the Gaza millions or so that at one time were Egyptian citizens. Egypt gave up Gaza after 1967 and has not evidenced any need to reclaim their own citizens. It's just a walk from Gaza into Sinai, and there are a million or more people waiting to make that walk, but Egypt won't open its doors. Now, there's also danger in the north. Hezbollah repeatedly threatening Israel, if you do this, then we'll do that. And Iran, master of Hezbollah, repeatedly threatening Israel, if you do this, then we'll do that. None of that has happened yet. It might. The Israelis are determined to end Hamas finally, as if it's ISIS. That was a connection made right away by the prime minister. Hamas is ISIS. We did not negotiate with ISIS. We will not negotiate with ISIS. The U.S. and its allies, to my understanding, wiped out ISIS as a caliphate, and then as a presence in northeast Syria. There are still ISIS chapters in Africa, for example, in the subcontinent. But nothing much is made of ISIS in Syria the way it was before the U.S. and its allies moved against it, using B-2 bombers, high-tech, wiped it out, at least for now. So we come now to what is to be done about the president's promises for Israel and the Middle East peace in his speech. It was pointed out to me during the week that the president did not speak of Iran. That is not entirely true. He did speak of Iran in the speech, but it was an odd reference. He talked about how Mr. Putin, well, I'll read it. Meanwhile, Putin has turned to Iran and North Korea to buy attack drones and ammunition to terrorize Ukrainian cities and people. You see, that's the part of the speech that was written before October 7th. Iran is the story. Iran is the driver of Hezbollah. Iran funds Hamas and Islamic Jihad. We know all this. It's not disputed. The Wall Street Journal reported that there was a meeting in Beirut about a week or 10 days before the attack on October 7th in which Iran greenlighted the attack. That's refuted by voices since then, and the Israelis are looking to prove it in some fashion. It's all logical, so I'm not quite sure this is not a courtroom. In any event, I mention all this because we don't have an easy way to solve the Middle East. This war has been going on as long as there's been a state of Israel. And the bad actors are now demonstrating their futility by protesting in London, protesting in France, protesting across the United States, saying unacceptable things on university campuses. Peculiar conduct by members of Congress. So, Germanicus, we can't solve this, but we can come to the fact that the president now has two wars on his hand. He embraced them in his speech. But I'm not at all clear what he plans to do for Israel. That fleet, those two fleets, the Ford and the Eisenhower, when it gets there with its escort vehicles, they're massive, but the problem is on land. So do you measure that the president is ready to participate in this conflict in the event that Hezbollah follows through on its threats, in the event that Iran follows through on its threats? There have already been missiles launched by the Houthis, who are surrogates of Iran, that were intercepted by the U.S. Navy. Do you wager that the president would strike Beirut, would strike Tehran, in the event that they salvo the more?
The president only elided the issue of Iran and mentioned it, as you said, in the context of Iran supporting Putin. And my sense is that the U.S. Leadership, the imperial court, is desperate to avoid a wider war. And it may be that Iran and Hezbollah have cold feet as well, because a wider war would be massively destructive to Lebanon and to Hezbollah. And Iran is in a position of trying to continue to build itself to the great power in the Middle East with its rapprochement with Saudi Arabia, and now its partnership with Russia paying off. I would imagine that Iran wants nothing to do with a wider war. The real difficulty is that for Mr. Biden, for the emperor, is he has to balance the kind of rhetoric that he deployed in his speech, trying to relive World War II without having a war. I mean, those carriers and the squadrons of planes that are being sent to U.S. bases in the Middle East represents serious power, and yet it is being deployed to deter Iran and to deter Hezbollah, and it's also meant to serve as a changeling for actual battle. In other words, if you rattle the saber, as they say, loudly enough, then perhaps people will think that you're actually doing something. And the result is that the imperial court, the administration, is in a very vulnerable situation because it's not in control. It doesn't know whether or not it can, A, deter Hezbollah and Iran, and it doesn't control Israel, which is the most dangerous actor at the moment, because depending on how Israel pursues its campaign against Hamas will pretty much determine whether or not there is escalation in a wider war. And we can't control Israel. And Mr. Netanyahu is under such pressure that he can't afford to step down or find himself out of office, because he'll be shortly in prison. And he needs a successful end of this war in order not to be seen as the most failed prime minister in Israel's history. And too many people were killed in too extravagant and flamboyant a fashion on that terrible day for Israel to back off. So the trope that is being bandied about now is Mosul. And Mosul is not a positive shard of rhetoric to toss around. And it's being tossed around by Israelis, by American, mostly retired military leaders, as some kind of ideal. Well, the battle of for Mosul took months, and over 30,000 women and children were killed, along with the ISIS fighters. The city was leveled, and that is exactly what it will happen if the Mosul option is pursued. Now, I should say here, the Mosul option does not involve Israel's own incursion necessarily, or I should say the incursion would happen after they had destroyed, leveled Gaza and penetrated all the tunnel network, because Israel can't fight a campaign in Gaza that results in hundreds or thousands of Israeli soldiers being lost. And we have to remember that the IDF, for all of its reputation and its legendary stories, is a citizen army. It's like the National Guard. There are a few crack units that Israel uses, and battalions and the like that are specially trained. But you can't send a National Guard into urban combat. It will be very bloody for Israel. So they're going to try, I think, to pursue the Mosul option. But if you're killing 40 or 50,000 Palestinians, it's going to force Hezbollah and Iran to do something. And already you're seeing a lot of activity, meaning low-level combat, artillery duels and the like, up in northern Galilee and southern Lebanon between Hezbollah and the IDF. And so there is tremendous potential for escalation. And things are supposedly at a boiling point from everything I've read in the West Bank. So an explosion there would also be another tripwire. And if it got very bad, you could even see nations like Turkey getting involved. And Turkey has a lot of emotional, historical investment in becoming a great power again in that region. And you see all that going on in Syria, as it has for the last couple years. And there's just too little that the administration can count on. And anything that escalated or blew up would really damage, if not completely cut the legs out from under this administration going into the election. So it's kind of a wing and a prayer. And I think that the World War II metaphor, which has no bearing in any of its, well-trodden tropes, any bearing on the actual situation in the world today and the situation America inhabits. America is in a very weak strategic position right now. It's losing the war in Ukraine. It's thrown away its arsenal of democracy and given it to Ukraine, and it's been lost. And there is, at one point in the speech, the emperor mentioned all the Patriot missiles he was going to send, but the Patriot battery that we sent there failed. It was wiped out, and all of its missiles were shot off, and it's possible that Americans died because they were clearly running that battery. And we've heard nothing about the Patriots since then. So it puzzles me to see that mention, but it shows how impoverished we are now as a military power. We have all the weapons, but we don't have the ammo.
1942, Germanicus. 1942. I hear that repeatedly in that first week out of Israel, and I'm coming to see that they were looking at us when they said that as well.
Right. And the problem is that these aren't allies in a struggle against the totalitarian world as it existed in 1942. These are dangerous client states. And when I say dangerous, that is not a criticism of either Ukraine or Israel. It means that as our clients, they create a danger for us because they put us in situations we can't control. And we did have control over what happened in Ukraine up to the time the war started. But once the war started, we were stuck supporting Ukraine, and we'll be stuck supporting Israel. And the escalation could be devastating for our position in the world.
Hence wider war. Germanicus is Malcolm Vlahos. I am Gaius John Batchelor. We're headed to the theater, but before we get to the theater, Germanicus has some thoughts about Casey at the Bat, and I have some thoughts about Achilles of the Iliad. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.